8 minutes after 9:08, as we welcome you into the 9 to 10 show for this Friday. It's American DA Live with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Good morning.
Hey, Jack.
How are you this morning?
Well, I'm tap dancing.
That's good. That's good. We've got an interesting case to discuss. Tell us about our guest.
G.L. Ovey is the Commonwealth Attorney down, way down in western Kentucky. He's got a four-county circuit. And that's a lot.
That's a lot of area.
Yeah, it is. And he's been a Commonwealth Attorney down there for a long time. And he has the Eddyville Maximum Security Prison is in his jurisdiction. And we'll want to talk to him about how that affects his caseload and so forth. But most interesting is a case that he and I were talking about. It's a guy named Timothy Doyle. And it's a 1998 case. He was charged with being an alcohol beverage control officer and was shot and killed by this guy. And GL is with us today. GL's been on before.
Yep.
And GL, welcome.
Thank you, Ray. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, GL. Well, how's everything down in the West?
Everything is doing fine. It's a little cloudy, but it's warming up, and hopefully we'll have a beautiful day today.
I love Western Kentuckians. Never met an unfriendly one.
We're a pretty friendly bunch down here.
I've met some unfriendly Central Kentuckians, but I've never met unfriendly Western Kentuckians.
Kind of like Ray Larson.
Yeah, talking about Ray. Yeah.
Well, that was a suck-up thing. GL, tell us a little bit about your jurisdiction. You've got four counties, and tell me what counties they are, and how do you manage to cover that much territory?
Well, first of all, I've got four counties, as you've said, in the 56th Judicial Circuit. The counties that comprise this circuit are Lyon County, which is my home county, where I was born and reared, Livingston County, Caldwell County, and Trigg County. And as you mentioned earlier, within the boundaries of the 56th Circuit lies the Kentucky State Penitentiary, which is the state's maximum security institution, and we also have the Western Kentucky Correctional Complex, which now houses female inmates, recently having undergone a conversion from all male to all female inmates the last couple of years.
Where is that?
It's in Lyon County, on the border of Lyon and Caldwell counties.
So they built, is it a new facility?
No, it came from minimum security years and years ago. It used to be called the farm. And then they converted it back in post-1988 after the Great Escape. It was converted by Secretary John Wigington into a medium security institution at that time. And it remained that way, medium security, until it was determined approximately 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, that it should be converted from a male institution to female institution.
Okay, so it's a medium security. We've got a minimum security, they call it here in Fayette County. It's called Blackburn Correctional Facility.
Yes.
The people that work in my office call it Camp Blackburn.
Uh-huh. This is not a camp by any means. They've got the razor wire. You know, they've got their own administrative segregation unit now. They're totally autonomous. Used to, if you had a disciplinary problem at the farm center, at the complex, that inmate would have to be transported when it was male institution to the state penitentiary for administrative segregation at the prison. That's not the case any longer.
So it's okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this Timothy Doyle.
All right.
Tell us. Give us some facts.
Well, this crime occurred back April 16, 1998. Brandon Thacker had been with the Alcohol Beverage Control as an officer for about 3.5 years.
Now, let's stop a minute, because most of our listeners don't understand what is an alcohol beverage control officer. What does all that mean?
They're a sworn police officer, just like any other officer, but their primary responsibilities are to enforce the state's alcohol liquor laws. For example, Brandon and three other officers just before his attack had been the day before in McCracken County in Paducah engaging in a program known as Cops in Shops. They were monitoring in the stores, watching and making sure that there was no underage alcohol sales. Either way, not the younger kids were not trying to buy, nor were the businesses trying to sell. to the underage kids.
One of the things that what happens is they put an ABC officer in plain clothes behind the counter,
right,
in these liquor stores.
They actually become employees.
Right, and they mostly work the drive-in windows.
Right, and like I said, mostly it's to enforce the laws in respect to younger individuals trying to illegally buy alcohol.
You know what I'd like to see happen?
What's that?
GL, I'd like to see somehow the legislature allow the same kind of thing happen in the scrap metal area.
Right,
where you could put undercover officers behind the counter at these scrap metal places.
We're having an increasing problem with that mm-hmm. down here in Western Kentucky, right. Also.
Okay,
and I think that's a great idea.
Okay, so Timothy.
So Brandon and his other three officers had completed their work in McCracken County, and they had the same type of operation going to be established in Henderson, Kentucky. So on the 16th, all four left McCracken County. Each were in their own ABC cruiser, and they were proceeding I-24 eastbound in somewhat caravan form. They were not just totally, one right after the other, but in fact, they were traveling together. They had communication with one another via the radios. And they noticed that as they were coming into Lyon County, still on I-24, this red small vehicle was going past them at a high rate of speed, then stopping, and they had to pass him to try to avoid, contact with him. And as the officers approached the Western Kentucky Parkway upon leaving I-24 eastbound lane, there was a communication from Brandon, who was in the last vehicle, and all the other three officers ahead of him heard that. He said, "This guy just tried to run me off the road, and if he does it again, I'm going to have to try to stop him." Of course, he had blue light, and he has full powers, to stop individuals. And the next communication heard was Brandon went over the radio and said, "I've been shot, I've been shot, I've been shot." And there was a female officer, Jennifer Shearer, in the vehicle immediately in front of Brandon, who testified that she looked in her rearview mirror and saw what she thought was a tire being blown out, when his tire blew out. Then she heard that communication again, "I've been shot, I've been shot." So she luckily was able to turn around and get back and render some semblance of aid to Brandon, but he made it to the hospital, but he did not survive, given the 44 Magnum that was used upon him. But anyway, that's basically it. Doyle was apprehended just a few miles up the road from the shooting by one of the other officers who had heard the communication from Brandon and was coming back to render aid. Jennifer Shearer had told him, "Stop the red car with one individual in it," and that was done. And that led to his arrest for the murder of Officer Brandon Thacker.
When he went to the, so they got him to the hospital, but where had he been
in
shot?
In the chest.
So he bled out.
Yes, absolutely. There was three bullets we could tell fired. One missed him, but lodged in the car. And we were able to match that as coming from the weapon that we recovered, or the officers recovered, that was turned out to be Tim Doyle's weapon that he had purchased sometime before this incident.
Right. Okay, so he's arrested, and let's walk through the process. So this guy is arrested and charged with
murder.
Right? Okay.
Capital murder.
So what happens in that case? Walk us through how the case proceeds.
Okay, the case went through the district court because of the arrest of Tim Doyle. There was a preliminary hearing that was held by the Lyon District Court to determine probable cause that a crime was committed in this particular case and probable cause that Tim Doyle committed this act. The hearing was held. The district court found probable cause, and it was bound over to the grand jury.
Okay, now let's stop there a minute. Now, what does all that mean?
Well, that means the case comes to the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. At that juncture, although I was aware of the case, I had been to the scene, I knew it was going to be the responsibility of my office to prosecute this heinous crime. It still was left to the county attorney of the county of Lyon County to present the case at the preliminary hearing. Once it was sent to me, we impaneled a grand jury. That's 12 citizens that determine again whether there's probable cause in order to get it to the circuit court, to get it to the trial court for this capital offense felony crime.
So if the grand jury believes there's sufficient evidence to believe the crime occurred and that this character did it, then they issue
they return an indictment, right, which they did in this case, and it was returned in open court.
Okay. Now, you said murder, a capital offense. Now, what does all that mean?
Well, murder at that time, the statute says murder is a capital offense, but that doesn't necessarily mean all murders are death penalty type cases. However, in this case, this murder did qualify as a capital offense because Brandon Thacker was a police officer, and that constitutes an aggravating circumstance that can be used by the prosecution to try a case as a death penalty case.
Okay,
and that's what I opted to do.
Okay, now Brandon Thacker is a law enforcement officer.
Correct.
And he was in the line of duty at the
time.
Now, what if he was just at home and working in the yard, and this same guy shot and killed him? Would that make
that's
it?
An interesting case? You know, I guess it would all depend upon the facts of the case, but I don't, and my position is, as a police officer ever off duty, what were the circumstances if an officer was at home that he got shot?
Well, that would
maybe
be,
somebody was carrying out an execution or a vendetta against this officer.
Well, that's kind of those are the kind of issues that you got to kind of deal with
in
making a charge.
We'll take a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wblkam.com. Back with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Western Kentucky Prosecutor G.L. Obey is with us, and this is a crime that goes all the way back to 1996, I believe. The trial, I believe, was in 99. But this is definitely not your sort of run-of-the-mill, if there is such a thing, murder case. This is very unique, and we haven't really even gotten to that part yet, Ray.
Yeah, the right off the bat, there was some, as I listened to GL talk about how the guy would speed past this these four ABC officers and then slow down and then speed up and that sort of thing. The first thing I think is, I wonder what's going on with this guy. And turns out the guy had some issues. GL, is that right?
That's true. It came pretty apparent. Number one, that concerned me when I was briefed about what the officers knew about the case, about the crime, because of the seemed to be, you know, trailing the officers, speeding up, and the officers having to go around him. Well, that night when they were brought him in to book him on the murder, he said that Brandon Thacker, the officer, was a kidnapper, which was strange. After the preliminary hearing, when he was being transported from the jail before he got into the car to be transported or from the court to the jail via our transportation officer, he made a statement, and the media picked up on it, that he was a hero. And it just seemed like it ballooned from there, and we got to looking at it, and there was some mental issues. In fact, the defense did give notice of intent to rely upon insanity as a defense. We requested an evaluation be conducted.
Okay, now let me stop you here. What is an insanity defense? What does that mean? They've notified you that they intend to rely on an insanity defense.
Right. Their position was going to be that Doyle, at the time that he committed his crime, he was suffering from a mental illness or some sort of intellectual disability that prohibited him, or he lacked the capacity to appreciate the wrongness or the criminality of his conduct, or that conduct being shooting Brandon Thacker, or even if he did, to conform his conduct to the requirements of law. And that's more or less, did he know what he was doing? And if he did, could he have kept from doing that particular criminal conduct or engaging in that criminal conduct?
So you asked that he be mentally evaluated, and where was he sent?
He was sent to KCPC. It's a Kentucky Correctional Psychiatric Center at LaGrange. We use them very, very often when there's issues of competency of a defendant to stand trial. In other words, does he understand the charges and can he assist his lawyer in the crime? And in this case, we not only asked for their opinion on competency, but also whether or not he was considered insane or what the problem was that could allow him to be successful with his insanity defense.
Okay, so how that and did you get the results back on that test?
Yes, the evaluator at that time, Doyle underwent a multidisciplinary approach, underwent all kinds of testing. He had an IQ of well over 100, but however, they said that he was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia and that he possibly could utilize an insanity defense. I was very skeptical of the report because of certain things that we learned about his conduct.
Like what?
Shooting.
Like what?
Well, you know, he used his own weapon, and he had the ammunition in the weapon, not only in the weapon, but in the car. But yet after he shot, he fled, and he threw the weapon out. He flew the bullets out.
So if he didn't know any better, he wouldn't have done that, is what you're saying, yeah.
Right. And also, when they stopped him, one of the questions that they asked the state police when they arrived, can you get the death penalty here in Kentucky for killing a police officer? And I thought that somewhat kind of negated that he was insane at the time of the act.
So he knew he obviously, that's called an act inconsistent with innocence.
Yes.
Okay, so you got that, and did you ultimately get this guy? Tell us about getting him from there to trial.
Well, we went to trial, and it was a 9-day trial. And keep in mind, regardless of what the evaluation concluded, I filed my notice of aggravating circumstances. I proceeded proceeded as a death penalty case. The jury was death qualified. We tried this case for 9 days. We did have psychiatric testimony to show his condition. But, you know, it even come out at trial, another act that he did, and that was because of cross-examination by the defense who opened the door, that he invoked his rights that night. And he wouldn't talk to him without his lawyer. So that, to me, was an indication also that he knew what was going on and he did not suffer from the insanity to the extent that the defense was claiming. However...
Now, let me stop you a minute.
Okay.
If the jury found him not guilty by reason of insanity, that would mean he could not form an intent to commit the crime.
Correct.
See?
Correct.
So that's the issue on the insanity defense. Now, the fact that they raise mental issues is always, in my opinion, in my experience, is always an issue for the jury to have to wrestle with. As they're listening to all of this and as they deliberate. And so, did he testify?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I thought for the most part he made a very good witness. He kind of detailed his history and why he thought that this officer was a kidnapper. He had been involved in a situation in Melbourne, Florida, just before this. He was in Florida. And, he thought that... these certain men were trying to kidnap these women. He was infatuated with this. And he called the police, and they couldn't find anything to substantiate what he was saying. And I think reading between the lines, they ended up asking him to move on out of that particular locale. And unfortunately,
get out of town by sundown. John Wayne.
It was one of those, I felt like our cross-examination of him went well. We were able to ask him about the details about getting rid of the weapon, getting rid of the ammunition, asking that question about the death penalty. It was already in evidence about him invoking his rights. And all in all, we felt like we had a very, very strong case for intentional murder, period.
Was his professional that was maintaining his schizophrenia, was he credible on the stand?
Unfortunately, well, yes, because it was the same psychiatrist that was employed by KCPC that testified for them.
Oh.
She was the one that came up with this diagnosis of schizophrenia. You know, we were left with the choice of, do we get someone else? Well, she's our examiner. You know, we asked for it.
Right.
That's where we send, you know, individuals that need to be tested for court purposes. So I made a conscious decision in consultation with the family that we were going to go with what we had, and we believed that we could overcome what she had to say.
I'll tell you something interesting, Jack. When we send somebody off to KCPC for evaluation, we get what we get. We don't send them in there with some preconceived
right.
notion. Now, the defense can send somebody off to be evaluated, and if they don't like the answers they get, they don't have to call them.
Right.
You see, we get what we get. And I would have done the very same thing GL did. You just put them on and let the jury make a decision.
You don't ever want the jury to believe that the prosecution is hiding something. You know, I believe in, you know, presenting it all and then let the jury, you know, sort it out. And that's what we did.
All right, let's take a break here. This will be a good stopping point. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. News Talk 590, WVLK, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson in the studio with us. On the line, on the phone with us is Western Kentucky Prosecutor G.L. Ovey. And let's wrap this thing up, Ray.
Okay, G.L., you're the man. Now let's talk about, it took 9 days to try this case. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how how long was the jury out?
The jury was out 12 and one half hours. In fact, the jury got the case around noon. And at midnight here in my office, we were here, still here waiting to hear the verdict. And in fact, the judge had contacted us. He had made plans to halt the deliberation and sequester the jury in a nearby hotel. However, when we got there, the jury said, give us 30 more minutes. We think we can reach a verdict. And they did. Unfortunately, they found that Dole was guilty, but they found him guilty of manslaughter in the first degree, but mentally ill.
Now, that means that he intentionally caused the death of Officer Thacker, but was operating under some sort of
emotional disturbance in this particular case.
You were disappointed. No doubt you were disappointed by that decision.
We were in shock. The family was in shock. You know, I still think about that case often because, as it turned out, the jury in sentencing did give him the max 20 years, which that was a violent offense. But at that time, you only had to serve 50% of that sentence to be eligible to meet the parole board. And Mr. Dole now is out. He served 11 years of that 20-year sentence.
But he wasn't paroled. He served out.
He served out with all the credits that he was entitled to, good time, meritorious good time. He served 11 years, and he's now a free man under no restriction whatsoever.
That is
just amazing. That makes my blood boil.
Well,
yes, it did mine too. And I learned that he was getting out and had only served that sort of time. As far as that
has it changed since then, Ray? As far as our state,
yeah, they got to serve on a violent crime. They got to serve 85%. But if you want, we can bring Rick Bartley in here and watch him peel his forehead off the ceiling when he starts talking about this truth in sentencing, because there is no such thing as truth in the Kentucky sentencing. I can go for years on this, but we'll get Rick Bartley in here, and you can watch a guy just absolutely almost have a seizure right here talking about it.
As there's obviously hindsight's 20/20. As you look back on this case, is there anything you would have done differently or could have done differently?
Not in the least.
No?
I made the decision that I thought was best, and I maintained that was the correct posture to take it to time, and I maintain it now. If I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do anything different.
You know, one of the things that we may be disappointed in a jury verdict, or we may be disappointed in a judge's sentence, or we may be disappointed in a parole board's decision. But the thing GL and I both understand is that's not our decision. It's
right.
The jury's decision, and what we have to do is learn to accept those things because that's the plan.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
And so I frankly don't, and GL and I have been doing this about the same length of time here, and you get these things that happen, and you just got to keep on keeping on.
How's the family doing today, or do you have any idea, GL?
The last time I had contact with the parents, they were at the first parole hearing. They were doing well. They were still bitter over the decision of the jury. I periodically communicate with Jennifer. It's been some time. We exchange emails. She seems to be trying to pick up the pieces of her life and moving on. And Catherine was two at the time, so she's grown and probably in college, but now maybe out of college.
Was the community shocked?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was just something that, that took the community, by surprise. You don't expect things of this nature to happen in Lyon County. And then a few years later, we had the Kevin Wayne Dunlap case in Trigg County that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And things like that just don't supposed to happen in Western Kentucky, but it proves that no community is immune from this kind of conduct.
Did you have an opportunity to talk to any of the jurors?
Briefly, we got mixed signals from them. It seemed the overwhelming majority wanted to convict him of murder outright, but there was one, maybe two holdouts that just more or less thought maybe he was entitled to defend himself and wanted him to go home. So it was a compromise. Instead of the few holdouts that wanted a lesser, the overwhelming majority compromised and went lower.
GL, thank you very much for being with us.
I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
See you later, GL.
All right, Ray.